Okay, good afternoon. Look, thank you. We realise we've got the graveyard shift today, so I appreciate those of you who have turned up, those that have turned up for the wireless. We appreciate and we're counting your numbers as well, so thank you for being in here. Today we want to talk about a program that has brought together both the Smith family as an organisation and Info Exchange Green BC to deliver a project nationally. Now, it's quite an exciting project, so I guess hopefully we do it justice within the next half an hour or so that we speak for. I'm going to start with a clip that basically has nothing to do with this project, but it's really more of a bit of a wake-you-up for at the end of the day. If it offends anyone, I'll also apologise immediately straight away. The link is the graveyard shift, just in case you're wondering. Is everyone awake now? So again, as I said, absolutely nothing at all relating to the subject that we're going to talk about. So really, the Smith family, you may or may not have heard of, certainly been in the eastern suburbs, eastern states for some time. But for everyone else, we're a national organisation. We have around 550 staff, been operating since the 1920s, was established from five guys who donated some time and dollars out in the western suburbs of Sydney. And when asked what their names were, they all replied that we're Mr. Smith, so they wanted to stay anonymous. So that's how we've been built, basically. Quite very simple. No religious affiliation, non-political. We have, it says 85 there, that was in December. We've now got close to 95 communities and locations that we're established in around Australia. We also have a fairly large research team, so we make sure all the programs that we deliver are evidence-based before we just put them out there in the community. Very quickly, I'm not going to cover this in great detail, the structure that we work on, we have three main streams, being financial scholarships, where we have just over 28,000 families that we support through scholarships that might be to provide either dollars to help kids buy resources, so books for schools, or it might be to allow them to purchase uniforms so they're not picked on by their peers. Or it could be to go on school excursions. So, again, they're able to participate at the same level that any other child may be able to. We then have other streams that support that. We have personal support that might be programs such as mentoring programs, tutoring. We have student-to-student programs, which is a reading program from senior students to junior years or the earlier years. And then we also have a personal development stream, which is really focusing on the arts and the athletic and the skills ability of the individual. Now, underpinning all of those is the area that I fit into, which comes under literacy skills development. And my area is digital literacy, and hence why we're here today at this conference. But we have digital literacy, which again is around building the skills and allowing opportunities for families that they may not have normally been allowed the opportunities for based on IT. So we're basically using IT as a tool for engaging with the families. And we also have financial literacy as well that steps under there. A very quick snapshot. I talked about the 28,000 scholarships, 1,800 mentoring programs. We also work and have a number of communities that work with the Communities for Children program as well, so we deliver that. As I mentioned, the student-to-student program. We have 120 centres around Australia that run the Microsoft Unlimited Potential program, so that runs as well through the Smith family. And we have 225 students delivering an iTrack mentoring program where we'll match a corporate mentor with an identical student to assist them on a 16-week program over the internet. They spend an hour of every week mentoring each other. That's very quickly the Smith family. Now, that's not what we're here to talk about. The aim of our talk today is to really speak about our Technology Packs program. This program came through, the Microsoft Unlimited Potential program that we had developed, where our research told us that if we offered training to a community centre, on one hand, obviously, it was good in that the person could go to that centre and learn, but if they didn't have a computer at home, they obviously couldn't further their learnings. The other side of that is that if families or students had a computer at home, they didn't necessarily have the skills or the confidence to be able to use it without the training that the community centre provided. So we teamed up with Info Exchange Green PC to bring together both of those. So we actually delivered a low-cost refurbished computer to families. We provided training that's both on the system, but we also provide on face-to-face training as well when they collect their computers. Now, that all sounds good, but we're still missing an element, and that other element was the actual funding portion of it. Now, typically a computer through Green PC, and Claudia, who will speak shortly, may correct me if I'm wrong, but you may pay anywhere between $250 and $350 for a computer. Now, again, we know a lot of the financially disadvantaged families that we're working with simply can't afford those dollars. So then we connected with, we have a lot of support through our corporate and businesses around Australia. So we then approached a number of those corporates to come on board to help support this program. So basically we're providing now a refurbished computer. We provide 12 months of internet access as well, because we know that they need to have access to the World Wide Web. And then we provide the training program as well. Next year we'll be piloting a couple of other variations of that model, but it will have all started from, you know, these basics with a refurbished package. So to date we have delivered close to 600 computers in just over 12 months. So in effect we've now worked with 12 communities around Australia. So it is a program that is certainly gaining some great momentum. It's now just about how quickly we can get the corporates on board and match them with the communities in which we work. So for those communities, we're tapping into our local networks, as you would in any community that you're going into. So we'll be working with the schools, we'll be working with the local community centres, we'll work with local government and the council within the community. And we'll really try and bring all of those groups together so that we have a better chance of creating a sustainable program. So the more involvement we have, potentially the better chance we've got of getting this program to survive over a longer term. The aims of the program, as I mentioned, provide the hardware, software, support and the internet, and also to give the opportunity to individuals to learn those ICT skills, whether it's for the kids on one hand, because again, we often think that kids that have grown up in the last 10 years or so have grown up as digital natives, but when in fact we're still dealing in communities that don't actually have access to the internet and certainly don't have computers. So a lot of kids that are out there today don't have access to any of this information that we're suggesting they're growing up with. Trying to extend the involvement of parents to get involved in the program. So often our training sessions will have predominantly parents in the room, but it means that they'll be actually working with their kids as well. So I'm certainly trying to encourage that. Obviously, trying to build the self-esteem for the individual. Again, it can be quite empowering, or disempowering is the other side, that all of your friends may have this IT and be able to jump on the internet or look at YouTube, yet not have access to the computer. So again, for the individual, quite empowering. I've spoken about the collaboration and who we work with, also the funding. At a local level, how we'll advertise and actually get those families. So what we'd actually try and do is go into a community with, say, 50 to 100 or 150 computers at a time, in that we want to get some sort of depth or some sort of impact when we go in. We don't simply want to offer one or two computers and then disappear and keep doing it all around the country. It's got far greater results if we go in. Then if they train as a group, so we might have anywhere between 10 and potentially 20 in some of our training sessions, you'll often find that they'll build a connection in that particular place. So for some of them, that's their own community, and they'll potentially stay and continue to email each other beyond that training session. I won't go into the logistics or how we offer it. We could certainly ask some questions later on if there are any. I might at this stage invite Claudio to come up and give you a bit of an overview about Green PC and how they fit into this program.
Thanks, Simon. Okay, we're from Green PC. Well, I'm from Green PC. I just wanted to let you know who we are, as it states above. Green PC is part of Info Exchange. What we try and do is we're trying to break the digital divide between the haves and haves not. One day in the year 2000, my director was walking along the streets of the city and noticed all these computers being thrown out. And he thought, well, the bug's coming. Well, obviously, we all found out that the bug did nothing, so we thought, well, we can utilise these computers. So what we did is partner up with Microsoft as a MAR program. So we offer Microsoft products with our computers for low-income people. As you'll see through the slide, Green PC, what we try and do is empower people using IT technology at a very affordable price. Go on that one. Okay, our organisation seeks to, again, through the haves and haves not. One of the things that we have three clear goals. One of the things we try and do is employ long-term unemployed people to build these computers, to give them self-esteem, to encourage them to stay with us for a certain amount of period. They get a certificate in IT, and we try and move them on to a bigger and better organisation, someone, you know, where they can earn a lot more money than what they currently do with us. Being a not-for-profit, we try and look after people in the communities, not-for-profit field, and people on healthcare cards. People who own a healthcare card are the only people, and not-for-profit and community organisations, who can order from us. We do not sell to people on full-time employment. We do not sell to corporates or anyone like that. We try and look after the people who really can't afford a good computer. The third thing down here is one of the things we tried to work on with the other organisations is to reduce the waste that goes to landfill. We know that computers can be saved. Why do they need to go to landfill? One of the things we try and do is resave them, reuse them, and put them back into the community. We know if we do a good job, they can last for about 7 years. So there's really no use to throw them into landfill, which a lot of organisations are currently doing. Okay, the range is who we look after. We look after community groups, the disabled, the not-for-profit sectors. We try and provide computers, IT training and internet, as well as 12-month help desk support, as you'll see in the next slide. As Simon mentioned, we've partnered up since 2005 and we've delivered over 600 computers to families throughout Australia and currently have two projects on the go to deliver in Western Australia and Tasmania, so that'll bring that figure up to about 750. The people who have had these computers since 2005 continue to call us. We offer a 12-month help desk, but what we try and do is help you for the duration of the computer. So if you've got the computer for 7 years, you can call us for 7 years at no cost to yourselves. It's a free call to us. The hardware we provided for this project, I just wanted to put this up so people get aware that the computers we refurbish are decent computers, are computers that will allow a low-income person have for the next 5 to 7 years, as I mentioned. They're Pentium 4s, they're 512 gram. We can obviously upgrade that depending on the specifications required for the project. 20-gig hard drive, again, that can be upgraded. So can every component of the computer can be upgraded, but what we try to start with is give them a package that they're familiar with. Once they get the training, they get an understanding. Once they hopefully find a full-time job or run into some money, then they can upgrade and buy themselves a brand new one or come back to us and get themselves a better computer. We also offer 12 months back-to-base warranty, so providing they can get the computer back to us, we'll take care of it for 12 months at no charge to the client. We also provide Windows XP and recovery CDs on the computer, so they basically get everything, get a manual as well. They get 12 months, as I mentioned, 12 months telephone support via a toll-free number, and they get a 12-month subscription to an antivirus program. So again, we try and look after everything without them having to do anything themselves besides register, and that we show them how to do that as well. They get 12 months unlimited dial-up internet access. We start them off on dial-up. We don't get them to go on ADSL because it's the first time they've been on the internet more often than not, so they're just getting familiar with it. So we just start them off slowly. But then there's obviously, after 12 months, they can always go to ADSL with us, or if they choose to go with someone else, that's fine as well. But again, we've still got 12 months or unlimited support, telephone support. So if they have any issues, they can give us a call and we're happy to help, provide, you know, even if we're not the provider, so that's okay. We'll certainly try and help. And at the end, as Simon mentioned, we try and do a face-to-face 30-minute training session. So when we deliver the computers, we bring a demo computer there. We show them how to put it all together, and we show them the operating system. We show them how to add things to it, such as a printer, what have you. We also show them how to connect to the internet with just a little icon they double-click on. They call us. It says call the 1300 number. They get a username and password from us, and then they're off and running. That's been running very smoothly. So it's only really two clicks, and you're on the internet. So that works really well. Also, with the training package, we found that initially when we gave the computers, a lot of families just took them home and really didn't do anything with them because they weren't familiar with it. But once we started putting in a training session, we found that all families went home and were confident in how to put it together. It's all colour coordinated, so you know, if you're not colour blind, you're fine. It's red in red, blue in blue, green in green, you're off and running. Put the power button on. And so we give that all in picture form, so try and make it as easy as possible. And that's it for myself. So I'll put you back to Simon to wrap this all up. So if anyone has any questions later on, feel free to ask.
I might just ask now before Claudio sits down. Is this? I was probably going to go through in a bit more detail, more of a case study around Brimbank, which I'm sure you're all aware of. Brimbank. Is there any questions perhaps anyone has? I mean, we've covered a lot of this very quickly and just given you some broader outline of the project. Is it, is it interesting? Is it something that you're looking at? Is it, is there of any relevance to your areas? Or any questions you want to ask at this early stage?
Now that computer companies are offering recycling as part of the purchase price, in other words, you know, when you buy a new computer, they will take the old one away. And the cost of new computers are getting so low because, you know, I've actually done pricing on this before. And I'm not quite sure how you guys accomplished this because it looks pretty good. Because the pricing I did indicated that by the time you refurbish an older computer, you've actually spent more money than it would have cost to get a new computer that can run modern software. So do you think that, I mean, even though this is really great stuff and it certainly has done wonderful things for many people over the years, is there less need for this coming up in the future and maybe there's another way to remove it? Or are you still, you know, pretty much at the high part of the curve and accomplishing great things?
We're on the way down, definitely, with China now building brand new computers for $400 and sending them all out all over the world. It's starting to come down. But part of Green PC, we also are a recycling organisation, so you're always going to need us, whether we're going to refurbish them or not. We see in 5 years there'll be no need for refurbishment. You'll buy a brand new computer for $250 with everything on it. So as far as the refurbishment, yes, we're on the way down. As far as organisations wanting to donate their old gear, that's on the way up, and that's how we get a lot of our computers, by being donated by large organisations. But now China's building brand new computers that for $300, $400 currently, you can buy a brand new one. A lot of people don't know about that right now, hence they're still using us. But in 3 to 5 years, it'll just be, you know, go to your local shop, pick one up for $300.
See, you have pretty good specs here, but the danger I see with these kind of programs is people like you appear to be doing it correctly.
Yep.
And providing a quality product. But it purports this image that used old computers are acceptable to schools and to nonprofits. And what someone like me sees, who has an organization that repairs computers and provides IT support, is computers that I have to literally go throw away when we get to places, and the people have lost all that money and those resources, which are really critical. So, you know, it's like what I'm saying is I think there needs to be a balance here. People like you who are doing it well and have obviously thought it out and are answering the hard questions, good on you. But there's also it's generated this this negative side as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't see anyone addressing that, and that concerns me.
We, as a not-for-profit, and we're part of a MAR program from Microsoft, so we're able to buy labels and on-sell them to low-income earners. And there's quite a few of us in Australia. Currently, we're getting together to have a bit of a chat to take that negative aspect away from people. Reason why there's a bit of a negative feel about it is because it's old, it's been refurbished or recycled, as most people think about it. What we won't do is the specs above us, we will not go below those specs, so a P4, we will not give a P3 or what have you. We'll try and build it as much as we can so they're safe to say that, yep, dual cores are out now, but you're one step behind. But again, if you look after it, you can get a certain amount of years on it. But we're also honest in saying we can do brand new as well. So depending on what you have as a budget, we can help either way. So we just don't limit ourselves to recycling. We do to refurbishing. We try and do both, but we give the appeal to the client to say.
I just think it's dangerous, and I'd like to see organizations like yours make that point, that you do have that limit, and then you don't encourage people to go below that. Because there are groups, and it also gives governments, like we've seen in the ACT, where someone like your group comes forward and says they'll do this, and then the government uses that as an excuse.
Spot on.
For not providing the appropriate funding that they should be providing. Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
That's very counterproductive. Yeah. It makes my job incredibly difficult. Mm. So I wanted to bring that up. And just quickly, and that in no way, I'm not complaining at all about what you're doing. It's great. Okay? And I was very careful to say that because it is good work, and you obviously have done wonderful social things, and I'm very proud of you, and I respect what you're doing. One quick question is, can you just explain to me the internet connectivity you do? Do you have your own ISP?
Yes, we do. We're an ISP provider. We're also a training provider as well. So we host websites, we build websites. So we're basically a one-stop shop for not-for-profits.
So what does that, I mean, maybe you don't want to answer this in a public forum, but
sure.
What does that cost that we have internet connectivity? And I would imagine it's low, and as somebody who works in a uni and deals with connectivity and bandwidth charges and all the crap that's going on in this country about, the internet, how do you accomplish getting reasonable costs for connectivity?
Sure, we've brought Telstra on board. We're, I don't know if anyone knows Hoddle Street, the Collingwood high-rise buildings, and in Brunswick Street, the Atherton Gardens high-rise building, or the Fitzroy. We wired all that up and put computers through that and internet through that, and we got large corporates to come on board to help provide the funding.
Okay.
One of the things that Telstra did is not only provide over 20,000 computers to do this, they've also provided cheap ADSL and dial-up connections for our clients. Spot on.
Really,
yeah, and look, it took us 5 years to get to this point, but no one wanted to listen. But finally, there was a person at Telstra who ears must have pricked up. We met with him, and everything he tries to do now, he does for the not-for-profit sector and for us. So they're trying to build up as much.
Because that's another issue. There are other groups that recycle computers.
Spot on.
When I asked them, what's your connectivity solution? They actually said
no. No, spot on.
And I almost fell off my chair.
Greenpeace, we are now the auditors Australia-wide for any organisation wanting to ship things across overseas. So a lot of people are trying to do that. Ship it over, no one will know, but now they're calling upon us to do the audits because the government believes what we're doing is correct and want others to follow suit where others aren't. They're trying to cut corners and so forth. So we're trying to stop that, which hopefully will give that name bit of a change. Not a problem. No worries. And please, feel free to look up the website. All the information's on there. Might help, might answer some other questions.
Thanks,
Scott. So look, Brimbank, I really was just going to highlight, we delivered 100 computers to Brimbank over probably a six-month period. High Call Community, which I'm sure you're aware of, that obviously presented a number of other challenges for us to overcome, which was then around the support. And we talk about the cost. I mean, we're looking at a model that incorporates new computers as well at the moment, but the costs start to escalate when you're looking at adding the supporting mechanisms to be able to assist those families. So we don't just simply want to go in, dump a computer and then run. We need to actually provide a number of levels beyond just that computer. So Brimbank, again, obviously financially we can start with that issue. Contacting GreenPC when you speak X number of different languages. I think we had six main languages other than English. When we went to a Brimbank just amongst those 100 computers. Not having a landline, obviously, is a fairly major barrier for trying to set up internet transport to even come and pick up the computer. So these are a number of issues that we need to work with. We had a strong community partner in Community West out there that was able to do a number of things for us. And again, they were a central point that community members gathered or came to. So again, they were a great partner for us. out in Brimbank. So I'm not going to continue with the rest of that model. I think it was, again, it's been a great model for us, but we're now trying to replicate that across the countryside and deliver on a number of similar objectives. I'll finish. If you were in Canberra, did you go to the Computers in Education conference?
No, I didn't.
Right. Some of you may or may not have seen this. Again, this is just a small clip, goes for 5 minutes, that is more so around educators and children in education and how we're actually using technology, and basically saying that we are not really teaching kids anything different now than we were in say the 70s, yet we've got far greater technology, but we're not actually using it in a means that really engages with the children. But have a look at this, and something to listen to.
The U.S. Department of Commerce ranked 55 industry sectors by their level of IT intensiveness. Education was ranked number 55, the lowest, below coal mining.
For the last 100 years, we've used the industrial narrative. Schools are like factories. It's a ministry of postings. It's about control and order.
The kids are having a much more stimulating and rich environment outside of schools than they are in school.
Kids are very rich content developers today through their social networking sites. They're big communicators through email, instant messaging, and text messaging. And yet all of those things are banned from their schools.
If you turn off the device, you potentially turn off the child.
We have to accept as educators that technology is not really a choice. It has created a world. It's just not here to help you teach traditional subjects. It has invented, has emerged a completely new environment.
It's about relationship, it's about community, it's about connectivity, it's about access.
Children are living now in a different space. They're living in what I call nearly now. And nearly now is that space that they're texting, the space that they update their Facebook entries in, the space that they Twitter in, the space that is not quite synchronous. Now, it's a really interesting space because it's not adversarial, it's not pressure. It's a space where people can, it's all the elements, they can reflect and retract and research and repeat. It's a very gentle world. I'll tell you what, it's a great world for learning.
If I could be my own classroom today, I'm not sure it would be a bricks and mortar classroom.
So the students at the center in school is just one of the ways and places that they learn. But they also learn through community, at home, in museums, in libraries, and of course, online.
It's about providing the best quality teachers no matter where a student lives and making those bridges.
It's wandering around the city with their cell phones and collecting data that the kids will be doing outside of school.
The school might be a place where you come together to do joint projects, where your social network, where you do some of the other kinds of enrichment things.
We've got a classroom system when we could have a community system.
It's about opening the door to NASA resources, to the labs that are being developed online at MIT, and connecting these students to the kinds of opportunities that will fundamentally shift their academic experience and make them better prepared not only for college, but for life.
You start with teaching. If I want my students to make global connections, then I'm going to give the tools to my teachers first and provide them with opportunities to connect with other teachers around the world or other teachers around the country.
The task here is to give teachers a place where they can swap authentic ingredients and the evidence that those ingredients are safe and tested. Do you know that doesn't exist anywhere in the world? I've just been part of a big project that I think is going to change that and change that radically.
We have to develop a narrative that sustains 21st century learning.
If we simply apply standards, if we simply have a steady regime of standardized testing, that will make things better. When in fact, it is economically actually a foolish idea, because the jobs that these kids in school will be having do not call for this kind of right answer vending machine approach.
Let it fade away. It enables global creativity and innovations.
They will be doing work that calls on their artistic abilities, that calls on their abilities of synthesis, that calls on their abilities of understanding context, that calls on their abilities of working in teams, that calls on their abilities in some sense to be multidisciplinary, multilingual, multicultural.
So the coin of the realm is not memorizing the facts that they're going to need to know for the rest of their lives. The coin of the realm will be, do you know how to find information? Do you know how to validate it? Do you know how to synthesize it? Do you know how to leverage it? Do you know how to communicate it? Do you know how to collaborate with it? Do you know how to problem solve with it? That's the new 21st century set of literacies. And it looks a lot different than the model that most of us were raised in.
Now we're looking at a whole different range of schools. We're looking at schools of producing genius, calamity, precarious, brave children who care about stuff like their culture. And those schools that do that is a whole another challenge. And around the world, you know, people are testing out the ingredients of what makes that work. And those ingredients are being assembled into some just stunning recipes in different places. This is a very exciting type of learning. It's the death of education, but it's the dawn of learning. That makes me very happy.
Sorry, a good piece I thought was relevant probably more to the conference around IT than this particular talk. So thank you for those of you who did stay for the end of the day. Appreciate it. You're welcome again to ask any questions either now or after we finish. Thank you.
Thank you.